It is that time again for your weekly dose of common sense. That means it's September 3rd, 2025. Fall has fallen on us, I guess. At least here in Ohio, we've had some cool weather, cool mornings. So we call it sweatshirt mornings.
Nice. Yeah.
Nice. Perfect.
Yeah. Some pretty cool football games, too.
Some football is here. Sweatshirts are here.
4 days of football? They could make that a habit.
It's like, of course, right?
Oh, so
they're finally, they're finally catching wise. But anyway, we've got lots coming. Narcos apparently are going on a Caribbean cruise, and it's not really the love boat.
No.
They didn't get any Trump love anyway. We've got courts hating Trump on tariffs, immigration, LA deployment, and all sorts of other stuff. Who'd have thought? Who'd have thought? Mm.
And we got Texas flying home very quietly on that charter flight, sure.
Texas, long flight home.
Arch, not so much.
And do you have a fool for an attorney? Ryan Ruth does. We'll get to that and much, much more. But first, let's talk about our sponsor, Harper Plus Accounting. Our accountant could be yours.
Are you an entrepreneur who doesn't know when to pick up the phone or get out the keyboard to contact your CPA?
A lot of people are like that. And one of those things that you have to figure out when is the right time to do that is when you feel like you don't know what's going on. How much money am I making? How do I pay my taxes? I'm running my business out of my checkbook and I have no clue what's going on. I don't know if my employees are making me money. I don't know if my products are making money. I don't know which way I'm going. I'm upside down. I can't concentrate or can't think about anything other than where the heck am I, instead of thinking, how do I grow and continue on my business? That's when you should call.
So if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to have a tax question in regards to that, drop it in the comments and we'll try to get back to you.
All right. Harper Plus Accounting. Our accountant could be yours. No big deal. Just get him. Call him. He'll help you out. All right. So again, lots to talk about today. Norm, let's get the list rolling because I want to plow through it all.
Okay. Let's start off with this over the weekend, or actually just like 2 days ago, so I guess Monday, the U.S. Navy in international waters in the Southern Caribbean took out a narco-terrorist boat allegedly full of fentanyl, which fentanyl's killing 150 Americans per day on average, and there were 11 narco sailors on board, and they shot a missile or some kind of kinetic munition into that boat, and you can see the video online. They absolutely
pulverized it.
Oh, yeah, it was blown out of the water.
Well, this is interesting because didn't Trump, I think last week, said he's declared war on the cartels? Was that last week?
Yeah, Nancy Reagan, like back in the Reagan era, I think, or maybe even before that with Nixon, there was a war on drugs, right?
Yeah, that was more of a metaphorical war.
Yeah,
and that was like,
well, it turned out to be
yes.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, that focused, you know, on us.
That focused on us.
Sure. Yeah.
Just say no.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
It wasn't like
the DARE program and all that kind of stuff.
It wasn't like we're going into Colombia like we went after Pablo Escobar. Yeah,
this is a different war. So look, the 80s was an experiment on, can we stop illegal use of dangerous drugs by prosecutions, by imprisonments, etc.
Yeah.
And I think by a lot of measures, that was an abject failure.
Yeah.
A lot of people spending huge, like go research how much time people are doing things like acid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I remember defending those cases. Right when I first started practicing, you would defend those cases and you'd have a kid at a dead show with a 8x12, 8.5x11 sheet of paper. And, you know, there's tabs on it.
Yeah.
Little dots of acid on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they were measuring it by dose. I mean, guys would get absolutely stroked out of the ballpark who were just deadheads, man, going to a show. Yeah. Here you go, dude. Mm-hmm. And look, I mean, you could say that that's a dangerous drug, but I don't think that was the intent. I'd put in some deadhead, 19-year-old deadhead in prison for a decade.
What did that
do? I don't know that that solved many of the problems.
Right,
right,
right, exactly.
Now, look, I often hear the other side of this, which is that the Just Say No campaign, like you brought up, Brett, was a total failure. I don't know that that's true. And I don't know that there's a good metrics to measure that, but I know this. I'm not shy about admitting how much alcohol I used to consume, but I never touched hard drugs. And some of that was because of fear. Like I was brought up in an era where if you did cocaine once, you're going to get addicted to it. And I don't think that's necessarily true, but it was enough somehow to deter me. And believe me, I was inclined.
Well, cocaine was kind of glorified in pop culture.
In the 80s,
You know, driving a train out of cocaine and, Eric Clapton's song about cocaine. Mm-hmm. And in our culture, Miami Vice, they would kind of even the gangsters were kind of cool.
Yeah, they're cool.
They're dealing cocaine.
But there was so much coke coming across the borders in the 80s. Yeah. So much. And look, we had the DEA out there, and Miami Vice made entire TV shows about busting cocaine.
We
people.
Did kill Pablo in the end.
Yeah.
On a roof.
And, you know, I've worked on some of those huge cocaine cases that have roots back in those 80s era.
For sure.
And I've heard some of those stories of what those guys were doing. I mean, there's still expats living in Mexico because they got indicted and never came back, you know, and part of the huge cocaine influx back in the 80s.
Yeah.
So, and you know, the movie Blow is about that too. There's lots of that. So I guess the war was both, but Trump has declared like a real war. He said, look, we're in war.
Yeah.
We're at war with cartels in Mexico.
We're going to sink you.
And if you think about what the cartels are doing, maybe that makes some sense. They seem to rule Mexico.
They do.
Mm-hmm. They seem to be in charge.
Yeah.
They are shipping over quantities of fentanyl and other dangerous, the really dangerous stuff that's killing our people.
Yeah. And they're in business with the Chi-Coms.
And they're circling in other stuff. You know, it's like, look, it's hard to argue with it, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Sure.
But people are.
Yeah. And you know, this is a president who lost his brother to drug abuse. You know, died of alcoholism, and J.D. Vance's family. I mean, his mom was destroyed, and you know, basically, she's made she's rallied here at the in her later years. But his whole chaotic childhood of living with grandparents who were a little nutty. You know, if you read his book, his grandma had guns in every drawer in the house. And, you know, she was a little wild. But other than that structure, there'd be no Vice President Vance.
But the problem there, though, I think those are apples and oranges, because perhaps we also need a war, and we did wage a little bit of a war on our own government, which encouraged, this is great stuff, because the government says, look, we've got all these people in pain. We need to treat them.
Mm-hmm.
And you doctors, you don't care, and you're not focusing on this. And this ends up being racist because the people are classist or whatever Marxist ideology you want to have.
Yeah.
So we need to help these people. And the doctors are like, look, I don't know what to tell you. And then at the same time, the government gets in bed with drug manufacturers who are creating this falsely advertised, non-addictive opioid substance called Percocet.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, go down the list, Steve. Ritalin. You know, we've medicated all these.
Well, that's a little different, though. Really, we'll set that over there for a second. But let's talk about the addictive pain meds first.
I'm just like, the government got in bed with drug companies, and it became like school policy, you know, on Ritalin. And it became like, you go down the list. You mentioned painkillers, and then we can talk about COVID vaccines. And just yesterday, Trump is saying to RFK Jr. that when Pfizer wants to roll out the next COVID vaccine, the next generation, he's like all this legislation passed where they don't have any legal liability.
Oh, it's gross.
That's all crap. And he's like, they need to prove that this stuff works before we require people or let doctors prescribe.
We're not at the speed of light anymore.
We
can do some testing and whatever that looks like.
Right.
Whatever it looks like.
Done.
Right.
It
and Trump's, but Trump's doing some tap dancing around this because he was all for it. And now the question's going to be.
Well, I think it's remarkable. I'll give him credit. There's another way to view that, Steve. You could say he's tap dancing, or you can say that Operation Warp Speed, in that 30 days after people got sick on the cruise boat, right? And he's operating, if you will, with Birx and Fauci whispering in his ear that the best to do is this. So he's real proud of Warp Speed. But here he is all these years later saying, whoa, we're not doing like Brett just said, it ain't Warp Speed.
He's taking a step back. He's taking and
so
he's
giving credit for that.
But I think what he said was, and I want to get back to the painkillers, but I think what he said was, I have seen some of this evidence from Pfizer or these other companies. I think you should release it to the public so they see it. I don't know what he's seeing. Let's see what they release.
Right.
Because I don't think anybody has been honest about
no.
the VAERS reports on vaccine injury. Totally. I just don't, particularly with kids.
And I know doctors that will say that on the record.
Yeah.
That VAERS was a nightmare. That reporting adverse effects is what VAERS means.
Mm-hmm.
That it just didn't work. And a lot of doctors were afraid to tell them the vaccines didn't work because
right.
then they become under suspicion.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you're anti-vax.
The government's thumb is on the AMA scale, the American Medical Association
right.
scale. Now, back to painkillers.
Okay.
So if you go back to the late 90s, there was all this, we need to treat pain, we need to treat pain. Because I represented docs who were running these horrible,
oh, yeah.
awful pain clinics. That's how they were pitched.
Well,
these
right.
guys are just pill mills. They're pain clinics or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And I represented these docs, and they're like, look, this is what the AMA told us to do. You guys told us to create pain clinics because these people are suffering
that's
in pain.
Right. That's right.
So we did.
Mm-hmm.
And then we prescribed the drug that you told us to prescribe, which right. is these opioids. And now people got addicted to it, and you're right. blaming us for doing what mm-hmm. you told us to do. Now, for sure— like anything else, it got out of hand. These guys were like, oh, we're making tons of money because
right.
guess what? The government's footing the bill through Medicaid. And
right.
a lot
of people got in trouble. We talked on the show mm-hmm. here about Kroger, CVS, Walgreens, you know, go down the list, right?
Mm-hmm.
All these pharmacies all settled for multi-billions, right? Because they filled those prescriptions
they filled them,
for
right.
opioids.
And
it's like, well, wait a minute. This was du jour. This is what you told
us. This is what you told us
that's
to do,
exactly right?
And now you're blaming us. Now, it's like the classic yeah. Thomas Sowell. Like,
yeah.
The government never takes responsibility for its own problems.
No.
It blames the people for
exactly.
implementing yeah. what the government told them to do.
Right.
And then when the government gets back to it, the criticism, the government says, well, you didn't let us do enough. You didn't let
yeah.
us fix it.
Right.
Like, yeah, right. And then, but then what happens is I think the cartels realize how powerful these opioids are. It's a huge profit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we can just start. So people got addicted to the pain meds, and then they just got shifted over to heroin.
Right.
And yeah. and now they're lacing the heroin with fentanyl, and I don't know what the value of that is. But
they did all kinds of stuff. They started doc shopping. They wouldn't tell doctor number two that doctor number
one. Oh, yeah, back then. Yeah, we had guys, the Florida
dude.
Pill mills were going on.
Yeah.
I represented folks who would set up mobile x-ray stations.
Yeah.
They would line them up in
yeah,
parking lots
right.
and say, all right, you got a leg problem. You got this. Here's your pills. Here's your pills. And then
right.
they would send school buses down for people to get prescriptions. I mean, I had several of those mm-hmm. cases. And look, it just got out of hand because how powerful that addiction is.
Yeah.
And now the cartels are continuing the problem. So I guess, look, the word is out. There's been some great documentaries on this, on the drug companies making this stuff and sort of hiding the fact that they knew
yeah.
it was addictive.
Yeah.
But now we've got this other problem. And Trump is saying, look, now we're going after, now it's a real war. So you're bringing drugs in. Guess what? It's a war. And what does that mean? That means we kill you.
Yeah.
You're bringing right. these substances in. It's against the law. So we're going to blow it up. So I'm curious what the other side's criticism is going to be. I mean, look, killing people is killing people, and you can't take that lightly, I suppose. But I think they killed 9 people in this boat.
11
in this boat with a drone.
That's what's reported, 11.
So what's going to happen? I mean, it's, certainly this would deter the same kind of smuggling. Money
is
powerful.
Well, what will probably happen is the smugglers will start to put in other human contraband in there.
Yeah.
Killing kids. You know, next time we blow up something.
Human shields.
Yeah. They'll come up with another means.
So it touches on our heartstrings here in America, and all right. of a sudden there's controversy.
They'll put in another means to get the dope in.
Something.
Yeah.
Something.
Like they're doing to Israel and Gaza, you know.
Yeah. Right.
You know, you hide your terrorist cell underneath a hospital
right.
or a mosque. So that you have to blow up innocent right. people to get to the bad guy.
Yeah. To your point about the DARE, the 80s of the DARE programs and such, I think we still have to address that.
It's got to be part of it.
It's got to be part of it.
It's got to be
part of it.
It's got to be.
I mean, I'm not a professional in that realm, but I think it did do some good. It made us think twice.
Well, look.
If that's all you can do is put that doubt in your
right.
head going, should I do this line?
Right.
Or, you know, I'm at
yeah.
this party.
Yeah,
I know.
No,
you know?
Right? Now,
I mean,
peer pressure is a pretty enormous
it is.
Force.
And luckily, you know, we always told our son, because he was in volleyball all through high school, and if you did anything, you're off the team.
Yeah, that's a pretty
powerful. Playing. And that was a powerful motive to not. And we
Good
always told
you.
Him, call us. If you're in a situation you got to get out, call us. No questions asked.
You know,
we'll get you out of there.
I read a quote the other
yeah.
day. You were talking about your mm-hmm. fatherhood standards, mm-hmm. which are beautiful. I read a quote the other day that the biggest lottery you can win is having good parents.
That's the biggest advantage.
Like,
and you can even simplify that more, having two parents.
Like, I met your father, incredible guy.
Yeah.
And you know, and you're a great parent. And it's just like for children that have a two parent household, at least during their formative years, and have that balance and are given boundaries. That's mm-hmm. what you set with your mm-hmm. son was, yeah. dude, there are guardrails. And you go past those, you mm-hmm. start losing stuff.
Right.
There are so many parents that won't do that.
Yeah, yet. So even, but there's another problem, and there's more we can talk about on this, but there's another problem, which is you have two parents, but like you said, Norm, there's no boundaries. There's not this permissive parenting, do whatever you want, go be free, do it's like, yeah. that's not learning. Like, making it soft for your kids teaches them nothing.
Teaches them nothing.
Yeah. And my son's in the Army, I write letters to him, you know, in the letter today, I said, dude, I could not be more proud of you because you have placed in front of you.
You may fight Putin.
You have placed in front of you an obstacle, a difficult one.
Yeah. Right.
Only because you did. I mean, nobody forced you to do that. No, you put an obstacle in front of you.
All volunteer army.
And it's hard.
Yeah.
And you're going to conquer that.
Yeah.
And when you're done with it, you're going to look back on that and say, it wasn't that hard, but it was. But it wasn't that hard because you did it. Yeah. And then
nobody can take that away from
nobody
you.
Can take that away.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it dawned on me, that's the key to life, is putting obstacles in front of yourself.
For sure.
Doing hard things.
That's right.
And as parents, if you deprive your kids of the opportunity to do hard things, and that means get made fun of sometimes. It means having to stand up to the bully sometimes.
Right.
It means having to get the F in flunking second grade because you didn't do the work.
Right.
It means having to experience those things, even though as parents, that's like what we hate to see for our kids as much as we possibly can. And I'm no psychologist. Maybe I pretend to be. But like, it's so important. I remember I had a meeting with one of my kids' teachers at one point, and they said, well, he's going to flunk. And I said, flunk him. And they went crazy. They were like,
absolutely.
Like, you could see the shock in the room.
Well, what were they expecting from you otherwise? A fight back? And
oh,
then
sure.
Then they say, okay, we won't?
They said, well, he's in danger of a flunk. I said, flunk him.
Well, yeah, because most helicoptering parents.
I told him to do the damn homework.
They think they're coming in as defense attorneys. And it's like, no, I'm on the side of the teacher and the principal.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what you say.
I'm not going to let it go too far. I'm going to create boundaries, but I'm not going to tighten it in and do this homework for him.
Right.
Like, look, your homework's done. You didn't hand it in. Flunk him. Give him the F.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a life lesson, man.
And they're like, well, we'll give him till, I think it was more like, we'll give him till the end of the year to put it. And I was like, no. When was it due?
That's right.
Flunk him.
Yeah.
And
your job.
I was making a point, and I don't think it had gone that far with my son at that time, but I was making a point. Yeah. I was sort of telling them, look, it's fifth grade. Who gives a crap?
Right.
Like, honestly, yeah.
I never flunked a grade.
Yeah.
But if I did, nobody would ask me that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody's going to say, oh, you flunked fifth grade.
Your fifth grade GPA is not going to keep you out of Notre Dame.
It is traumatic. It is. I get it. I mean, it's hard because you're in the whole class, but you kind of get over it.
Especially when you know that your kid is capable of doing the work. And they just don't feel like doing it.
Right.
Then it's like, let the consequences.
And
you got to let it
fall. And you're hearing that from the teacher and the principal, or whatever. It's like, your kid can do this.
Yeah.
We want him to, or
well,
her
and you
to,
know, as you a know. Parent, your kid can do it. Like, you know what your kid's capable of doing. Now, if somebody were asking my son to do something I know he wasn't capable of doing, and there's a consequence, I might intervene there and maybe move the boundaries a little bit. But like doing basic homework and handing it in, my kid was perfectly capable of that.
Yeah. I mean, it takes me back to that story where I went through a red light. You know, because I'm speeding around as a 16-year-old new driver. Go down to court. I'm thinking my dad's my defense attorney, right? And I'm thinking, I got F. Lee Bailey here.
Like, yeah, I got the guy on my side.
My dad's such a badass. He walks in there and he goes, hello, Your Honor. And the judge says, Norm. And I'm like, hell yeah, I'm getting out of this one.
Yeah.
And so they read the charge, went through a red light. Well, Norm, what do you have to say? And he said, Your Honor, I don't know what to say except that you're going to have to do what you have to do.
That's right.
They threw the book at me.
Yeah.
So, Steve, to your point, it was like going to the principal's office, right? And that was a hard lesson. I didn't get to drive the car to the prom mm-hmm. until the judge let me out of that. So I served like 5 months of no driving,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, good lesson. Quit racing on the street. What's wrong with you, young man? You're an idiot.
And in your life, it's not worse because of that. It's probably better because of that. So look, having spent a career now, 30 years representing folks charged with crimes.
Yeah.
There's a balance there.
There's a balance.
There's
of
a
course.
Balance there. Right. So I get parents who are like, look, judge, take his license, or you can't take his license because I need him to help with the family stuff at home.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets harder.
That's where it gets harder.
Right. So, but there's ways around that too. You can have driving privileges for limited things.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Or only if dad says so. But
that's right. They still do the yellow plate thing for drunk driving.
I don't know if it's still in the law, but I haven't seen one. The party plates.
Yeah. Which I loved. I thought that was a huge stigma. Yeah. That was great.
It was like the Scarlet A.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that guy's a drunk.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought that was great.
And that was the intention, was to shame people.
But I think, you know, back to the point you were making, Brett, about the average, just say no, et cetera. Alcohol, even alcohol now, and this is anecdotal. I've not studied it. But what I saw was going on when I was coming through high school and college and shortly after versus what I see my son going through the same thing isn't even close as far as the alcohol abuse and some of the partying that was going
on. Because the manufacturers are smart. They're sugaring this stuff up. Everything is sweetened up now.
And well, no, I'm saying it's better now. I think it's worse. Oh, see, there you go.
I agree with Brett on the marketing.
You
are seeing
like
they're conflating brands too. Like they're taking Sunny D and putting vodka in it.
Well, we always did that.
But now, a screwdriver. Now, Sunny D.
Oh, you mean canned up already?
Yeah, right. It's canned up already.
And you're
now, I don't know whether it's being abused more or not, but man, the marketing is huge.
I guess the drinking.
Coca-Cola with Jack Daniel's
is already there.
The drinking and driving, I think, has curtailed.
It has. In fact, I've got something here that is a good news piece that is down.
Yeah.
So alcohol consumption.
But Uber and Lyft is helping that too.
Yeah, sort of.
Maybe. I don't know.
I've got some anecdotal stuff. I don't know. See, I just know what I see when I come
back. Well, alcohol consumption is said to be down. Yeah. That news item, I saw that. But that's national. That's all adults, you know.
Or this past weekend, Labor Day weekend, I saw numbers were up for drunk driving.
Well,
Ohio had 23 fatalities, seven were
strange.
This is about enforcement, though. Yeah. So, you can go find as many drunk drivers on a weekend as you want to find.
And they were out. The cops were out thick this past week.
And if you put cops on the street, you're going to find more.
Right.
And it's going to look like the numbers are up, but only because there's more people charged, only because there's more cops out. Or the cops that are out are looking and doing something about it.
That's true.
So statistically, I've always been sort of leery about that stuff.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, because you'd have to measure, the same weekend a year ago, how many cops were out.
Yes.
And the intent weekend.
Right. So, a
year ago.
And then we used to have
sense,
like.
That makes sense, and they should measure it. That would be an interesting measure.
Remember Captain Kirk in the Fonz? Or no, not Captain Kirk. The cop was Kirk in Happy Days.
Oh, yeah.
He was like the enforcer and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, he would, there's a couple local back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was a couple local troopers and local Columbus police and some others. They formed a task force to go get drunk drivers up on Bethel Road on 315
in
Delaware.
Yeah.
And we had tons of drinking and driving.
Yeah.
But, it wasn't because there were more drinking and driving, more drunk driving. They were just really good cops out detecting it.
Yeah.
And they were good. I knew if Sergeant, I'll call him Doe, Sergeant Doe had a case, I knew it was probably solid because he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
I didn't always agree with him, but he knew what he was doing. So I had a tougher time to. So it just all depends on the enforcement,
right?
Yeah. Exactly. Sometimes they would even announce the locations ahead of time.
I think they still.
And
they
people
have to
would.
Well, checkpoints
law, right?
are one thing. Yeah, checkpoints. Oh. They have to announce it. I'm talking task force.
Okay. Gotcha.
So you would have. We would say we're going to have our 315 Bethel Road task force. And up then they used to have those bars on Bethel Road.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
We're getting way afield, and we need to be. Yeah. But and they would say we're going to go, and we're going to. We're going to enforce drunk driving. So if you're driving, if you pulled out of a bar and you rolled through a stop sign, they pulled you over.
Yeah.
If you ran a red light, they pulled you over. If you're going 50 and a 45, they pulled you over.
Yeah.
And I used to get the same thing. I've done my own podcast. I've done stuff about this, but everybody always complains. that's not fair.
That's not fair.
They just watch me leave the bar and get my car and go. And I always say, well, look, if you're a hunter or a fisherman or if you go, if you're after fish, you're going to go where there's fish.
That's right. Thank you. Yeah.
You're going to go find fish on top of the reef.
Yeah.
Right.
You're drinking on the reef there, buddy.
Okay. We'll go down this road just a little bit deeper, but I got to ask you. So driving home on Labor Day weekend, I know I saw somebody impaired in front of me.
Of course, right.
But I legally can't call the cops.
Yeah, you can.
Can
sure
I?
Can. Yeah.
On the phone?
Absolutely.
While I'm driving?
Oh, I see what you're saying. So, look, you can.
You don't have to do it while you're driving. You can pull over.
Well, you can also make a call while you're driving.
If it's an emergency, I would think so.
I call people driving. You're allowed, but you just can't be texting or doing whatever. But people make phone calls driving.
It's got to be hands-free, though.
You can make a hands-free call.
Sure,
hands-free. All right, well, that's true.
Okay. So you can mount your phone and just go boom.
Okay, but what if you, they're not going to catch it. You know what, I'm just thinking of the
You're creating a little bit, you're right. You're creating a little bit of a disconnect.
I was going to, but thinking, wait a minute. I don't have the hands-free ready, so here I got to get my phone all jiggled up and that kind of stuff.
So what's more dangerous, letting this driver drive down the road or you making a phone call?
I'll probably go off. Yeah, exactly.
I drove home. Anyway. I don't drink alcohol anymore. I drove home on Sunday night late. Got home about 10, 11 o'clock. That's not really late, but it's the witching hour.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I saw people.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I saw people, and I took it back way home because I didn't want to do it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't. This is, we're usually on the road Labor Day weekend for one reason or another, but I saw a lot more than I usually do. Something must have been the weather. There's something about this
football,
past.
Football.
Maybe that was it.
Right.
There that we never have had 4 days of college football.
And it was just a reason to party. Labor Day anyway, long weekend, football games, and it was a blast. All right.
Well, when we were having this show last week, and about the same time we were doing our show, in 1 hour, later time zone, in Minnesota, there was that terrible assassin who stood outside a Catholic church while children who were, it was the first week of school, they have this inaugural mass to kick off the school year, and that's what they were having at 8 o'clock in the morning. And at 8:15, this 22-year-old kid, young man that had gone to that school and his mother worked at that school previously, he shot through a stained glass window indiscriminately, injured about 20 people. Some are still in the hospital as we speak a week later, and he killed an 8 and a 10-year-old children while they're praying. I don't know.
This is one of the worst crimes.
You can't get more evil.
This is awful. It is horrible.
Yeah.
And the fallout from this is the classic fallout. On the one side, guns are horrible. You people don't ever do anything. The thoughts and prayers don't work. Screw you for your thoughts and prayers, whatever it is.
Right.
The other side gets entrenched in saying, look at the mental health. And nobody's really willing to open up the doors and actually meet in the middle and have what I'm talking about is a genuine discussion about it.
I was going to go there too. It's like, it's both.
Yeah.
There's a middle ground here. We've got to talk about.
Well, people went to their corners ready to fight immediately.
Yeah.
And the mayor of Minneapolis was particularly.
Which is a heavily gun-controlled area.
He was him and Waltz, the governor, were just off the hook almost immediately. I think for the first couple hours they tried to be, humane. But as soon as they heard any of the facts come out, and it is a fact that the guy's mother went down to the courthouse to change his name, his legal name.
Right, he was on gender-changing hormones. I mean, the whole nine yards.
I mean, these are facts, and it's not.
I don't even.
So I don't. I don't hate trans people. In fact, I have a few that are friends of mine, and they know that I don't hate trans people. But I think I'll just say this: if you want to talk about gun control. One of the items on the ATF form is, are you experiencing or do you have a mental health issue?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if a man with his tackle in, and if he wasn't born where it's unclear what gender, and he is just thinking that because he puts on a dress that he is now a woman, I think he has a mental problem. And I don't think those people should have guns.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Well,
but
I'm going that far.
I will say this. Look, I would say that there are probably trans people out there that are perfectly responsible to own and possess and use firearms. I think that's probably true.
Well, I think they're mentally ill.
Could be. I also think it's true that there are plenty of people, like the shooter in question here, who, with his own manifesto, has sort of acknowledged that he's all screwed, that like there was all sorts of mental health.
Did you see his videos?
I haven't, but there was so much screwy stuff.
You would be horrified.
But back to the drugs, though, Norm. I mean, look, so here's the problem. Nobody, like, it's taboo to bring this up. Like,
of
what
course.
You just brought up is taboo.
Oh, yeah, because I gave an opinion.
Look, if somebody's got a mental
guy.
Health problem, you can't give them guns, except for this one.
That's right.
And look, I may not be willing to go as far as you, but I am more than willing to say we need to explore all these things.
Right.
Like, look, we're giving these kids hormones, drugs.
That's right.
I can't say for sure whether those drugs are causing erratic mood swings, but I know that I got a little common sense upstairs. I would think that it's at least a question that should be asked, isn't it?
Well,
people won't let you ask those questions. So,
I think if
or
you
the advocates won't let you ask those questions.
I think if you don't, so if you're Ketanji Brown Jackson and you're in front of the Senate for Supreme Court nomination, and you, like these trans radicals, if you cannot tell the difference between a man and a woman, I think you're not on the same planet with the rest of them.
It's just not politically honest. But I guess where I'm going with this, Norm, is I don't know that because I filled out plenty of gun forms in my day.
Yeah.
Mental health disorder. What the hell does that mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know what
well,
it means
I think
necessarily.
This should be one of
is
them.
Depression? How about situational depression? I'm going through a divorce. I'm depressed.
Well, but if you check,
or
if you,
what about anxiety?
If you check the box and you say no, but you are you held accountable?
This was the Hunter Biden thing. He said, no, I'm not a drug addict,
right.
But he was
a drug addict. So it really has no teeth. And
he wrote in his book he was
wrong.
A drug addict but, and that he bought a gun.
Right. I mean, but it's not going to be, there's so, not so going to be but any
I think,
consequence.
And I don't mean the form is bad. I mean, it's theater because we go to the doctor for a physical. They ask you, how are you feeling? You can lie and they're not going to go, well, I'm going to follow you home and see how you're really doing.
Well, it's like your 1040.
Is your spouse beating you up?
Who's going to admit?
Right.
I've got
it. You go against the law and do something like this, all of a sudden, well, he lied on
implicit that form. In that question, in the answer, is that the person filling it out actually knows they have a mental health problem. In other words, that form was theater from the outset.
Right.
It's not going to stop anybody with a mental health problem from getting a gun.
Well, let's be a little better than that, I think, Steve. It's like the 1040. So we voluntarily disclose financial information to the IRS, and increasingly they force our banks, credit cards, et cetera, to report outside around us. But, you know, when the 1040 came out, it was a voluntary self-reporting system, and you got in trouble after the fact if you lied, and the ATF forms the same. So it is somewhat theater.
This is not something that's exposable. Most of the time.
Until the deed is done.
So how many people out there with depression, anxiety, and other diagnosable mental health disorders, whatever they are, have guns?
I don't know. Not being a federal prosecutor, but listening to them about the ATF form, I heard Trey Gowdy, for example, when he was a federal prosecutor, say he'd go down the federal courthouse and he'd have a dozen or more of these form cases, and they were perfunctory. You know, we found you lied. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's on this form and you get X number of months in the.
There's a lot of that going, but it's not on the mental health stuff. Most of the time, have you ever been convicted of a felony?
Yeah. Right.
Like, that one's obviously.
Are you a
objective.
Right.
Are you a
right.
citizen?
Right.
Obviously right. objective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or are you buying? Most of those are straw purchases, too. Are you buying this gun for you or somebody
exactly.
else? So those are obvious.
Yeah.
But somebody who's got situational depression or anxiety or some sort of soft.
Right. If you're under a court order, it possibly
that's
could,
different.
Yeah.
So now I've represented plenty of folks in state court on gun cases, and the state court gun prosecutor would say, "Look, I get the case resolved because my guy will acknowledge and to a finding that he's got a mental health problem.
Okay,
because then he's not going to get a gun.
Yeah.
Right. Then it's done. But we're talking about people who don't have that yet.
Yeah. Right.
Who
right,
go in like right, this shooter.
Like this guy. Yeah.
There's no way this shooter is going to say, yes, I have a mental health problem. Yeah. Don't sell me a gun.
Right. No. Yeah.
So,
no.
But I guess back to the question, it's like, look, I have plenty of guns. Taking mine is not going to prevent that crime. There's some logic to that.
No.
Right.
And
in fact, it might prevent you from stopping a crime.
That's right.
That's so, in progress.
And the other problem is, as I've always pointed out, is like guns exist, guys. We can't legislate them out of existence.
Exactly.
And if you're willing to do that, then what you also have to be willing to do, and you've heard me say it, we talked about it last week, I put jackboots on the ground and go start searching everybody's houses and taking their guns away.
Yep.
And I'm not willing to give the government that kind of power. Yep. Just not willing to do it.
So I was, you guys know who Larry Elder is, probably, you know, came out with those two great movies, Uncle Tom and Uncle Tom 2. Incredible guy. He ran for governor against Gavin Newsom for California a couple of years ago. Anyway, he's a radio commentator.
He started in Cleveland, by the way.
He was talking about this case in Minnesota, and this is not an isolated phenomenon with a trans assassin against a soft target. He found over a dozen cases since 2015 of mass murder attacks by trans people against, you know, people in bars, nightclubs, churches, et cetera, schools.
Well, clearly there's a problem, right?
And the biggest one, the one that almost perfectly correlates to the facts in Minnesota was that Nashville shooting.
The Tennessee one, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where.
Well, the problem is, here's the issue I was getting at. You're right at the heart of it.
Just give me two more seconds here. And what the FBI and the Nashville PD did is they suppressed the manifesto in that case.
That's what I was getting at. Mm-hmm. The media won't talk about it. Gun control folks won't talk about that. Now, and fine, fair enough. If your focus and you got a political viewpoint that you want to get rid of all guns because you don't believe in the Second Amendment.
Well, they don't want us to talk about trans people.
But if it were a white supremacist, they would be all over it.
No
or
question.
If it were some guy saying, I'm doing this for Donald Trump, it would be front page news. The manifesto would be published a million times over.
That's
so
right.
I don't care about either, but do it all both the same way.
Right.
And because otherwise, it just rings of partisanship. It's not a genuine study.
It's not an honest discussion.
This is what stops
us from coming to any kind, making any progress.
And like you
on
said,
any,
everybody goes to their corner. We're not going to have an honest discussion because I'm willing to have I've thought this through. So if somebody wants to argue about whether gun control is going to be effective, fine. But I'll at least argue with if you meet me in the middle and say you're willing to acknowledge this stuff that you're talking about.
Well, it's kind of like the D.C. crime thing. You're so anti-Trump or you're so pro-trans that you're willing to accommodate murder? Let's talk about this.
I saw these paragraph Facebook diatribes from people in my friend list that I like and don't dislike because of this. But it was always, these MAGA Republicans, these MAGA blah, 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 blah.
Blah,
and
blah.
And one person finally responded and said, well, look, sir, I know lots of Democrats who own firearms and are Second Amendment advocates.
Tons.
Like, why are you going there with it?
That's crazy.
Like, why are you going there with it?
Even Muriel Bowser, for example, is saying the D.C. crime is down and thank you for deploying. Now she is hated by her fellow Democrats because she admitted that Trump did one thing right.
Mm-hmm.
One thing right, you know. And now she's a bad Democrat.
It's
absurd.
It's partisanship at its extreme. It's just so stupid.
If Biden had done this in D.C., I'd be pro that policy. It doesn't matter to me which one did.
Well, yeah. I mean, I get you. I mean, look, it just seems like there's not a genuinely honest discussion because of the partisanship. And I think both sides are probably responsible for that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Trump had a horrible week last week. Just lost all kinds of cases in the federal courts. I'll just tick them off. A judge, Sparkle Sukhanat, a district court judge in California, blocked his attempt with the permission of the Guatemalan government.
What was the judge's name again?
Suki or Sparkle Suka Nan.
His mom and dad should have been slapped.
Her.
Her, I'm sorry. And no, you don't name your kid Sparkle.
She was born in Trinidad.
Yeah, maybe a cultural thing, but still, come
now
on.
she's got a lifetime job as a federal, a district court judge.
Oh, well.
But at any rate, she blocked this program that had been worked out by the State Department to return some children that are 10 to 17 years old back to their parents in Guatemala. That got blocked. Another judge blocked a similar deportation of Venezuelans back to Venezuela. And in fact, that Garcia guy, they won't let him go back to his home country, so he was going to go to Uganda, I think it was, or some place in Africa. But at any rate, they blocked the Venezuelan deportation. They retroactively, a judge in L.A., different judge, not Sparky, but a different judge ruled that back in June it was unconstitutional for Trump to have deployed the Marines and the California National Guard to quell the L.A. riots. And then finally, maybe the biggest thing is most of the tariffs were found to Trump had exceeded his authority, according to a panel, I think, in a federal circuit. So all these things are going to go to the Supreme Court, I guess, and we'll see what happens. But it was a bad week.
It was all based on his executive orders, right?
Yeah.
I think I have no problem with that. I think we need to push back against executive orders. We need to flush them out. To really find out the powers that can be. Because, I mean, the executive orders are crazy. But it's like, but again, if you can, that's fine. But let's push the boundaries on both sides of it. I know that's what he's doing.
I'm in favor of that as long as we do it quickly.
Right. I
don't want the tariff thing to hang out there for a year and a half.
Because that is affecting.
It took down the stock market on Monday.
Yeah.
And it affects the economy. The economy needs to know, are we doing tariffs or are we not doing tariffs? And if we do them, how are we doing them? Mm-hmm. So the Supreme Court's got to come out with a rule book here.
Right.
And I don't have any problem litigating any of this, but I do have a problem if it becomes this technique to just, like, the day after the Supreme Court says that Trump can do this, some district court judge looks for a little daylight between a comma and a period, and just to frustrate things. I think that's a misuse of the court system. But otherwise, if it's litigated in a prompt fashion, that's great. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Well, that's exactly what's going to happen. And I get the point you're making about finding space between the comma and the period, or whatever you're saying. But on the other hand, that's how common law developed. I mean, it's a slow, non-directional.
Well, you use the word slow. That's my problem.
I mean, that's it, right?
Then yeah,
if you go study the history of English common law, which going all the way back to France,
right?
Not just English common law, but if you go back to the Western common law, that's what happens. It's a slow-moving Leviathan that just sort of meanders in a general direction.
Yeah.
And as
miasmic.
people push the boundaries and they fight it and decisions come out and it changes the direction. I mean, that's the law. And the reason it's that way is because I think the alternative would be too fast. You like people can do too much too fast and there's no challenge. It doesn't give room for a challenge. And that's it. It keeps the government in check.
I find it and highly ironic that people who accuse Trump of putting children in cages, right, want to block his return to the Guatemalan government of those very same children.
Look, I'm not arguing with you on the merits.
I would say those people are assholes.
I think it all shakes out this way. I agree. I'm not arguing with you on the merits, right? But I do think it shakes out this way.
Don't cage the children and keep them away from their parents. You're separating parents from their children, okay? And when they try to reunite parents with their children, oh, no, you can't do that either.
Right.
Why? Because it's Donald Trump.
Well, no, beyond that, why? Because they want the borders open. And you can start going down a rabbit hole why they want the borders open.
Exactly.
But to your point, Brett, I don't like executive orders. I've never liked executive orders. I think this is a culmination now of three or four presidents who have slowly pushed the boundaries of executive orders. And maybe, just maybe, one day we have this whole branch of government called the legislative branch of government. Maybe they will start doing their job and we can actually have government work the way it's supposed to work. I don't think – and the other thing I hate about some of this power, particularly the tariff power that Trump's trying to invoke, is this idea that there's an emergency, so we have to act. And the reason I hate that is because that's one of those non-definable terms that has the possibility to give the executive branch of government plenary power to do whatever the hell it wants. And I saw that happen in broad daylight right in front of us and people agreeing with it during the, quote, COVID era, where we have this emergency, so I can do whatever I want.
Well, it's like the Interstate Commerce Clause. That's bullshit.
And what's going to happen next on the emergency power norm, back to the gun control discussion? We got this emergency with guns, so therefore I declare an emergency. I'm going to executive order them out of existence.
Right.
Now, then what's going to happen? It's going to meander through the courts. It'll get up to the Supreme Court.
Right.
But this is like you're going to end up with president after president after president. If you like what's going on, great. But the next time, the same a different president will use that same lever of power and do something you don't like what's going on. So I say limit all of it.
Well, we'll see what happens. I think probably what I would have done if I was president, I would have sent in the Marines or National Guard specifically to deal with federal property crimes.
Well, that's what and Trump that did would, on the with and, the to protect that, the Homeland Security.
And
folks.
That would have been enough.
I
that
don't
would
think,
have passed muster.
Of course.
And of course, they would have been in the same streets with the same Humvees and the same M4 rifles. It all would have been the same, except instead of in front of the county courthouse, they'd be just up the road a block at the federal courthouse. Mm-hmm. Same effect.
Same, or if you got federal agents in the county courthouse, right. there's different ways around it. That's why I always talk about levers of power. What lever of power are you using?
Exactly.
And I don't think Trump's got a valid lever of power, at least not the way he's stating it anyway, to deploy federal troops into local communities to protect or to enforce police power. The states alone have police power, not the federal government. And
of course, that's not what they were doing, but that's what they were alleging.
Well, no, this is what he's talking about doing in Chicago and in Baltimore.
Right. No, actually, what
he's
talking
about. Has he now recouched it? Because when it first said, he goes, I think I'll send him into Baltimore. Well, they got a crime problem up there, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So what? But what they did in L.A. is what he's proposing to do in Baltimore and Chicago, which was not – they weren't writing tickets for speeding, right?
Well, no, he was doing it on the heel – but he this discussion happened on the heels of his D.C. deployment,
yeah, so
which he had power to do.
Yeah. So what they – unlike in D.C. where they are writing, you know, where the U.S. Marshals, for example, can arrest people for doing drugs or speeding or whatever. They can be the police. As opposed to that, in L.A., when he deployed the Marines and the California National Guard, what they were doing was non-police actions involving citizens. They were relieving the police of routine duties that were not involving arresting people and that kind of thing. They were, like, directing traffic, you know. They were.
Well, again, that's state level stuff. So,
I gotcha. But it wasn't law enforcement in terms of like what we think of criminal law enforcement. It was, if you will, maintaining order.
Yeah, I got it. You've got boots on the ground.
But it's not that fine.
Federal boots on the ground.
Yeah.
You have to have authority to deploy that.
Right.
And the question is, if you're going to permit a president or my issue with it is, if you're going to permit a president to just simply declare an emergency and do whatever he wants, I got a problem with it.
So after 9/11, there were National Guard and Army in every airport in America.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't hear anybody whine about
it. I did.
That. Okay. But nobody went to court and won a judgment against George Bush Jr.
Because it was popular. You know,
I would say because it was legal. Maybe you don't view it that way. But I think if in Chicago, if you got an Illinois National Guard guy, okay, and he is standing on the L, right? And he's in a uniform, he's shouldered up with his M4, and he is just a presence on the L. Is that law enforcement? I would say it's not.
I would say it is.
Okay.
Because what's he going to do if he sees a crime?
Well, it depends on rules of engagement.
Well, he sees if a crime. He's going to intervene, and he's going to be a cop.
Is it just to display?
I'm not disagreeing that you should look. Here's the thing.
Yeah,
I went to Mexico last year.
There you go.
And on the streets are these guys in masks and armor.
Yep.
And they got their loaded up Jeeps full of all sorts of firepower.
Absolutely.
And they're corrupt as hell.
Yeah.
And I don't like any of it. I, you know, I, that's not to me. That's not what the federal government should be doing. Now, should the state do it? Yes. Local communities should be doing that.
Okay.
Now, how do you make that happen? I don't have all the answers, but I know the federal government doesn't have the general plenary power to do that. And at the local level.
Because I guess I'm surprised that we're looking at, let's just talk about Chicago. Why not infuse dollars to help the local and state to do
Because Chicago says we're not going to enforce crime.
They're as corrupt as Mexico.
Yeah. They're saying we're not going to enforce crime. Or like New York, Mondami, if he gets elected, he's saying he's going to eliminate misdemeanor crime. I mean,
Brett,
so they're letting it happen.
You may not know this, but in Chicago, in Cook County.
But you're right. Why can't they? Because they don't want the. They don't. I don't know why.
Right.
I can give you a good example.
You can ask them why they don't want to enforce crime.
About 25 years ago, they took out something like 13 Cook County, Illinois judges for taking bribes. There was just a widespread pay to play.
It's corrupt, right?
And the FBI took out 13.
Judicial branch. I mean,
judges.
Well, that's both.
They are corrupt as hell.
But
in
the
Chicago.
FBI was investigating federal crime. And they took down federal crime. We're talking about policing state
crime. Was Illinois judges. It was Cook County judges. It wasn't federal district.
No, but the FBI is a federal body.
That's right.
Investigating federal crime. State
corruption is
a federal
crime?
You can make that a federal crime.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's how they got jurisdiction.
Yeah, you can make that a federal crime. Or you get task forces or whatever.
But giving money to Cook County is not – that's not going to solve anything. Look at the billions they've spent in Chicago –
But Brett, you raise a great question. You raise a great question. It's like, because who in their right mind would say, we're happy with this crime-ridden insanity going on in D.C. or
Brandon Johnson.
Or as a Chicago native.
Or Chicago, if you live in Chicago and you can't go to the movie theater by foot, you're like, who in their right mind is cool with that?
Yeah, Pritzker and Brandon Johnson.
But these people sort of seem to be, and they always have this alternative, like, well, look, traditional policing doesn't work. We need to do something else. Well, it's not working. Yeah. All right.
Send a social worker.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I guess, I don't know what stance this is, but it's like, why does the federal government give a rat about this?
Well,
I mean, seriously, I mean,
isn't
why?
Illinois part of the United States? If I'm president, don't I view I have a responsibility to those people as well?
You raise a good question that is a fundamental one with our system of government.
If we were crime ridden in Columbus.
And Columbus isn't fixing it.
And we brought in feds to line the streets with armory.
Well, it's Ohio National Guardsmen. So it's federalized Ohioans.
But it would be the jackboot that you just talked about.
Yeah,
like
I don't
you
like
saw
that.
In Mexico.
So
to an extreme.
If you got I'm not afraid
because I think it's
National Guard or the California or the Utah National Guard. I'm not afraid because you know what?
But you're on the right side of the law.
Dude.
That's why it doesn't bother you. I'm not on the wrong side of the law.
Dude, those people are Matt Palmer. They are our fellow frickin' Americans. They're not here to put the jackboot on my neck. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little exercised here, but we have a citizen volunteer army and National Guard. Why are we afraid of them?
I'm not afraid of them.
We have created a bogeyman.
I'm not afraid of them.
Donald Trump is creating a dictatorship.
I'm afraid of the person in charge.
I'm afraid of the person in charge.
I'm not afraid of the Matt Palmers. I'm afraid of the person who's got the lever of power over those people.
Okay,
because the next guy is going to say this.
Other than blowing
troops,
up.
We've got an emergency and we've got too many guns on the street, so I need you to start knocking on doors and asking people for their guns.
Right.
Who's going to stop
that? That's what I'm seeing it too.
Do you think people in the army are automatons that if Trump says, hey, I just want you, like without a trial, I want you to RoboCop and Judge Dredd people. And like, so if you see a kid running away and you don't, and rather than chase him, just shoot at him with a howitzer. Do you think our army and National Guard are going to do that? No, they're not going to. Those are illegal orders. They're not going to do that.
Go read a book called we'll dig into this later. But
about my lie. Don't tell me about Kent State.
I'm not talking about Kent State.
Those are rare examples.
I'm talking about this.
Those are rare examples.
There's a book called, I think it's called Ordinary Men. And it talks about...
Oh, come on. I know about that book.
Okay, well, go read it. I have read it. About a third of the people did exactly what you're talking about.
But they're not they are not from our tradition.
All right, well...
Those were Polish. Those were Ukrainian.
What if only one does?
Those were Estonian.
All right. Well, look, all right, we're about an hour in. I think it's time to do some good and bad. I think I know Norm's bad.
My bad is that Putin played NATO and Trump, and he's full of shit. And
are we surprised?
Well,
are you?
Oh, some president. Seem to be.
I don't. Yeah,
well,
I
the presidents of France, Germany, yeah. Italy, Norway, Denmark. A lot of people are surprised. Mm. And if you're taking pleasure in the idea that Trump got played.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Then yeah. I would say you're pro Putin. So I'm not pro Trump or anti Trump. He's trying to broker a peace accord between Zelensky, Ukraine, and Putin, Russia. And one of them is a dishonest and a deceptive partner to that process. And I think he's been outed, and I think NATO's got to be doing something. Mm. And I would, at this point, I'm ready to bring Ukraine into NATO. Fuck it. Let's do it. Let's get that over with, because Putin has earned this. I mean, we need to draw a bright line somewhere.
Well, look, to the extent Trump got played, maybe not, but sometimes you have to expose what the other side is doing.
That's
and
exactly
you can only
right.
expose the other side by trying to be reasonable. And I've said this. I'm not going to mention name, but there was a guy we'd have arguments in the dorms in college, and I called it my John Doe rule. It's like, you're never going to convince John Doe he's wrong,
right?
But you can convince everybody else that he's wrong, and that's
right.
good enough.
That's right. Mm-hmm. My pro would be TCU. This is funny to me. TCU absolutely crushed UNC. What is it? 48-14. A 6-time Super Bowl coach. And on the same day, on the same weekend, his 24-year-old girlfriend, Jordan Hudson, filed for the U.S. Department of for the trademark Gold Digger for her line of jewelry.
Good for her.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that too much?
Oh, wow.
So she's taking it right on board. I'm a gold digger.
That's American exceptionalism.
Wow.
I know. Isn't that gorgeous?
Wow.
Anyway.
Wow. I found this on Kite and Key website, some good things. That they say the media is just not reporting on, that teen pregnancy has dropped 78% since 1991. Mm. Drunk driving deaths are down 55% since 1982. And only 12% of adults smoked in 2022, down from 43% in 1965.
That's all great.
That's
I think it's
all
great.
Good stuff.
It is. It is. I mean, and again, we don't keep talking about it. And there was one other one, too, that let's see, and air pollution's down too. Between 1980 and 2023, carbon monoxide emissions decreased by 76%.
Well, nobody ever talks about that, right? Because they want to do more.
Well, there is no climate emergency. Yeah, that's all bullshit.
Because that would suggest that we've done what we can, right?
Right,
exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's great news.
It is great news.
Especially with the health piece. And the emissions, of course, too. But the health stuff is like, that's super.
Yeah.
It's getting ingrained. That some of the stuff, the drinking and the smoking, that's good. So
All right. Well, there you go. I got no good or bad this week.
Ohio State number one.
Did mention Steve. Yeah. So this is in your bailiwick. But you mentioned at the top of the show about Ryan Ruth. So he's going to represent himself in this attempted assassination trial down in Florida. And you would say about a person representing themselves.
Yeah, he's got a fool for a lawyer, and he's got a murderer for a lawyer, too, or attempted murderer for a lawyer, too. So
I never thought of that.
You know, so if you think that you're going to be – yeah, sorry, we did skip that. I jumped to the end, but I'll use my good and bad to talk about that instead. So we've got – there's this notion that I'm going to represent myself, and there's been some famous folks over the years that have done that. The one that's popping in my head right now is Ted Bundy, the notorious serial killer, represented himself and did quite a good job at different points. But ultimately, you lose your perspective. It's almost impossible to do it effectively. And, there's a reason you have an advocate on your side in our system of justice. But is anybody surprised that this guy's a fool?
No.
No. So usually, you could say, and that's why I made the joke about he's got an attempted murder for a lawyer.
Yeah, right.
Because he's obviously got problems.
Yeah.
And he's obviously askewed. So if he thinks he can make rational legal decisions and represent himself, he's sorely mistaken. Now, the question is then, will judges permit that? And the answer is yes, they will. And there's a couple different things that can happen. The judge can say, fine, you're a fool, sir, but I'll let you do it. And you're going to have to follow the rules of decorum in a courtroom. You have to follow the rules of procedure. You have to do it correctly. And that tends to fluster these self-represented folks if they don't know the legal system. But even then, some do. Like, if I'm going to represent myself, I, in theory, could do it and at least follow the protocol because I know how to do it.
Yeah.
I'd still be a fool.
Yeah.
Because I've lost the other side of it, which is my perspective on reality.
Yeah.
And ultimately, the judge will permit it. Sometimes they'll impose or assign a standby counsel.
I was going to ask if there's just kind of somebody in the wings mm-hmm. ready to kind of walk in.
And yeah. Judge Cannon, Eileen Cannon, did do that.
Yeah. So yeah. They appoint somebody. Hey, look, you sit by Fool here. You sit by Mr. Fool. And
when he's done.
You're screwing up.
He's done, she actually allowed this shadow counsel to then stand up and make several motions on his behalf.
Often the fool won't even let that happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've had that. I've watched that hundreds of times in state court cases.
Is that just paranoia? Mm-hmm. Is that what it comes down to?
It's mental health problem.
It's not ego. It's paranoia.
I was reading about this.
Maybe both. Yeah.
Reading about this a little bit in depth, Steve, and one of the things Ryan Ruth, the self-appointed, defendant here, is he wanted to call several Harvard Law School professors as witnesses to explain what the law is in some area that he wants to discuss. And the judge just said, no.
No, you can't do that. See, that's the decorum and the rules.
Like, he doesn't know what a lawyer does in a trial.
Yeah. No idea.
He thinks he's going to put on a clinic about what the legal system what the state of the law is, and the judge isn't going to enter.
What's relevant in that case is whether the government can prove beyond a reasonable doubt the crime charge, which I don't know exactly the terminology they've charged him with, but it has something to do with attempted murder.
Yeah.
Did you, on such and such a date, at such and such a time, purposely attempt to assassinate the president?
And I guess the trial starts Monday. They've allotted 4 weeks, and the prosecution has said, we don't need the
four days.
Yeah, like we'll bust through this. Like, we've got him dead to right.
Yeah, we got a couple eyewitnesses, and he gets caught right afterwards. I mean, this is a state court murder trial. I do them all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or attempted murder trial.
Well, it's in federal court. But
no, but I use that sort of to say there's nothing complicated about it.
Mm-hmm. This, by the way, is the same judge who threw out that that case on Trump supposedly having national security documents that he wasn't supposed to have.
Yeah, she threw that out on a legal issue about how the warrant was issued or something like that. How the prosecutor got appointed.
He wasn't even appointed.
That's right. That was the issue. That's why she tossed the case. Okay. All right. That's your weekly dose of common sense right here in Ohio. We are coming at you each and every week. Check out our sponsor, Harper Plus Accounting. If you've got a question, you got a topic, you want us to cover something, shoot me a text, shoot us an email, do something, send us a smoke signal, whatever you do to communicate, we'll try to get back to you and cover it. If you want to be a sponsor, you can do that too. Common Sense Ohio coming at you right from the middle each and every week till now.